Well, hey, go ahead and grab a seat. Man, let's give it up for Brad and the band one more time. I don't know where you find yourself today, but I know I needed that. So, guys, thank you. Thank you so much. Man, that was so good. Man, just a reminder, right? Just a reminder, there is truly nothing that our God can't do. And with just one word sometimes. And so we're going to be diving into that a little bit more today. And my name is Chris, one of the pastors here at Crosswind, actually pastor of a brand new campus that's coming to Westfield Christmas Eve of this year. Christmas Eve 2021, brand new campus headed to Westfield. So if you want more info on that, head to crosswindweb.org/Westfield, and you can find out all about that. But today, we're jumping into this series, Spark, Igniting the 167. And you know, we're calling it because you've got 168 hours, right? And so we want to know, what are you doing with the other 167? What are you doing? How are you building up? How are you creating purposeful living? How are you creating momentum as you move forward week after week after week? And so today, we'll actually be talking about work. We were talking about how work fits into your week. And the type of work, it might look different for everyone. You know, whether you find yourself closing deals throughout the week, or maybe you're folding laundry, or maybe you're volunteering at a local shelter or caring for an aging parent, or maybe your job right now is filling out application after application after application. You know, wherever you find yourself, we all have some place where we put in the work. And after a year of kind of strained relationships with work, we're going to be diving back into the rhythm that is hard work, and how when we get this right, it sets us up for the rest of our lives. But before we go any further, I want to pray for us. Let's do that. God, thank you. Thank you for this time. Lord, I'm so thankful. And God, I'm so thankful for all the people that are joining us, whether they're here in the venue, whether they're joining us through the online window. God, I'm just so thankful because there are so many other places they could be right now. So many places they could be, but they're here with us right now, God. And I'm wondering that you might have something to say for each and every one of us, that you might equip us, that you might draw us a little closer to you. And I pray that that's exactly what happens today. That we would be a little bit different as a result of our time that we're experiencing together. That we'd be a little bit more equipped for some purposeful living when we leave this place, God. So we pray that all in your Son's name. Amen. So as we take a look at work today, you know, it's not very far into the Bible where we begin to see work. You know, we see God working right off the bat, honestly. We see God working right from the very first chapter, the very first book. We see this over, you know, six successive days or six successive periods of time. We're not going to argue that here tonight. But we see God, we see him working. And then on the seventh day, he rests. And we actually talked about rest and play just actually a couple weeks ago. And if you missed that, you can go to crosswindweb.org/watch, find all of the content we do here each and every week. But we talked about rest. We talked about play and how that is a part of your weekly rhythms. But we see here, we see God, and he's at work. And he's doing things like he's calling light out of the darkness. He's separating the waters and forming dry land. He's putting these swimmy things in the water. He's putting these creepy crawly things on the ground. And then he's creating men. He's creating women. And as he does this at the end of each and every day, it says this, and God, he saw that it was good. And you might be asking the question, well, what was good? What exactly was good in there? And the thing that he created was good. Yeah, absolutely. The thing that he created was good. But also the thing that he was doing was good. And what he was doing is he was working. He was working. And so we have to have this understanding that right now that work is a good thing. And we have to understand that right now for many of us, maybe you have a difficult relationship with work, and you might think, man, if my life was just a little bit easier, if I had a little bit more time off, you know, if things were just going a little bit better, maybe I wouldn't even have to work, or I wouldn't have to work so hard to provide for the people around me. And maybe it causes you to have a little bit of a bad attitude when it comes to work. Because, you know, we have this inherent shared belief in our culture and our society today that work is somehow not good. But here's the thing, if God did it, it is good. And so when I looked back, you know, this week I spent some time looking back over all the work experiences that I've had in my life. And it was actually my birthday this last week. And so, we all do that, right? It's your birthday. You spend some time thinking about the years past. You know, you're getting a little older, and so you just sit down. And so I spent some time just looking at some of the work experiences I've had over the last, you know, however many years of my life. I'm not going to share that number because some of you might laugh at me. But when I did that, when I spent some time looking at those work experiences, I started to see some patterns. And actually, this could be a really good next step for you to do this week, is to sit down and do this. We'll get to that here in a little bit. But the very first job that I had as a kid is I was a soccer referee for like six-year-old kids. You see, I played soccer, and so when I was about 12 years old, I got to become a referee and referee these little kids. I mean, you've seen six-year-old soccer, right? I mean, we've all seen six-year-old soccer. There's no refereeing. I mean, you're just kind of out there like pulling kids off of one another when they fall. You're picking them up off the dog pile. I mean, there's no soccer happening. But you see, for 12-year-old Chris, I mean, I felt like the king of the world with this job. You know, first job, I was getting paid $12 a game, and the games only lasted like 30 minutes. So it's like, man, you do five or six of those on a Saturday morning, and I felt like I was just loaded, just flush with cash as a 12-year-old, because what do you really buy when you're 12 years old? I mean, nothing, right? And I got a whistle. I got a whistle, right? And you might be thinking like, okay, yeah, a whistle, that's cool. But no, if you're 12 years old and you have a whistle, you are powerful. And if you don't believe me, give your 12-year-old son or daughter a whistle this week. Give your 12-year-old niece or nephew a whistle this week and just see who has the power in that relationship, right? You see, for me, when I was 12 years old, when I became a soccer referee, there was power there. There was a sense of responsibility. I had to show up when I said I would show up. I would have to do a good job and look presentable. I mean, this was the beginning of things that I began to learn when I looked at what work really was. My second job is kind of an odd one, to be honest with you. My neighbor across the street, his name was Bill, and he was kind of in some upper management, this ball bearing factory. And you might think, like, what in the world? It was an odd job. It was weird. But I was in charge of filing the orders. Like, that was my job in high school. So me and my best friend Drew, we got to go to this office, you know, whenever we wanted. We just clocked in whenever we wanted. It was open 24 hours a day. We'd clock in, we'd file some paperwork. If there's no paperwork to file, we'd go out and we'd just sweep the floors. I mean, we got paid good money for high schoolers, but we honestly did not work very hard. And we didn't have to, because there was no one really paying attention to us. And maybe you felt like that over the last year. Maybe there wasn't a lot of work to do, and there was no one really paying a lot of attention to you. And so you did kind of what I did when I was 16 years old. You just kind of kicked back a little bit. But one of those things that I recognized when I spent some time thinking about this week is that was maybe one of the first experiences where I had to work with people whose personalities weren't really like mine at all. You know, it pushed me outside of my comfort zone. You see, when I was 12 refereeing little kids' soccer games, I mean, I was a soccer player. Like, I knew that. I felt comfortable in that space. But as a 16, 17-year-old walking into a warehouse with people that are punching the clock, that was a new environment for me. I didn't know anything about that. And so it taught me a lot of things about that. And then the third job that I was thinking about this past week is, you know, heading into my freshman year of college, I worked at a textbook company. You know Pearson textbooks? Anybody know Pearson textbooks? Maybe if you've ever read a textbook, you have absolutely had a Pearson textbook in your life. And you were privileged to have someone like me that was getting that textbook to you. You see, what I did is, you know, that freshman year, heading into that freshman year, is I was in charge of taking the textbook from one assembly line behind me onto the other assembly line in front of me, putting in the box, and doing that 9 hours out of the day. While the box went by, another textbook, all day long, 9 hours a day, 3 months of my life that I will never get back. And to be honest with you, as I spent some time thinking about it this week, I'm really glad that my parents kind of pushed me to that. You know, not only because, you know, it gave me some spending money for that first year of freshman year of college, but it taught me the value of, like, furthering my career with education. It taught me the value of spending time with people who are absolutely nothing like you. It taught me how to relate to someone when I don't even speak their language. You see, that was maybe the first entrance of my entire life, of me being thrust into an incredibly diverse situation. an incredibly, and it was kind of a forceful entry. I didn't know what I was getting into. Me and my friend Luke, we were like, yeah, cool, good money. Like, yeah, we'll show up 7 to 4. We can do this. I mean, we can, you know, whatever. We can do a box. Like, we'll be fine. But you see, Luke, he spoke fluent Spanish. I did not. And so this was a forceful entry for me into a world of diversity, into a world where I was not the most normal, common, you know, person as I thought I was. Like, the world became so much bigger in that one summer to me because I spent time with people who didn't look like me, who didn't talk like me, who didn't act like me, who didn't grow up like me. And it was an incredible experience for me to do that. And when I look at all of those jobs, you know, I see God was molding me and shaping me and changing the way I viewed the world in so many different ways. But what I also saw when I look at all those jobs is I saw that at the end of every single day, I was able to look at something and see, you know, I did that. I was a part of that. I was a part of that little kid maybe becoming to, you know, growing up to love playing soccer and playing soccer all the way through high school. Or I was a part of that ball bearing, whatever those even are, honestly, I don't know, becoming something to work in something to do something. Like, I was a part of that. Or, you know, when I was in the textbook company, right? I mean, I was a part of a kid getting a book and learning and growing and furthering themselves. You see, there was that satisfaction that came along with the work that I was doing. But today in my job, you might wonder, like, oh, what's that like now, Chris? You're like a pastor. You know, what's your job like now? And you see, when I look at the end of my day, when I walk away, you know, turn the computer down, you know, turn it off, like walk away, turn around. Honestly, at times it feels like I can't see anything. I mean, it feels like I look at my day and I think, well, that was a day, just a calendar filled with meetings and obligations and places to be and people to spend time with. But I don't always have this tangible, like, oh, I got that thing done. But that served me well all throughout the rest of my life leading up to this current job, because this job now is people work. And all the things that God had taught me to get to this point in all the other jobs, he's using in me right now. You see, the same repetitive things, the same enduring through difficult times, spending time with people who are nothing like me, engaging your heart, engaging your soul. You see, these things God taught me all the way throughout my work experiences. And it was working on stuff that now has turned into lasting things, lasting value. Being with people who are different than me, different experiences than I've had. And all this is so important. And this is where we're going to be going after this today. You see, so over the next, you know, 20 minutes we're going to spend together, 15 minutes we're going to spend together, I want to give you just 3 ways that if you begin to implement them into your life right now, that it'll change dramatically the way that you look at work. And so the very first one is this. When we work, we get to be like God. We get to be like God. You see, God creates on the 6th day. He creates Adam and Eve, men and women. And when he creates Adam and Eve, he gives them responsibilities. In other words, he sets them up. He sets them up to work. Because if God works, then he wants his children to work as well. He actually says this, Genesis 1, check this out. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And I read that, I'm like, man, that's some good work, right? Be fruitful and multiply. Like, I can do this. All right, that sounds fun, right? I mean, those are some good words right there, right? I mean, come on, we can all be a part of that. But then there's a little bit more to it, though. There's this subdue the earth. How do we subdue? What does that look like? And so you've got to fast forward, actually, just a little bit to really get an idea of what God meant when he said to subdue the earth. It doesn't mean that the earth is out of control, not yet at this point at least, not yet here. Sin hadn't yet entered the world. So subduing the earth, it means to create culture in the earth, which was an incredibly important thing. You see, earth, it started in this Garden of Eden, and it ends, if you get to the end of the book, if you get to Revelation, it ends in this city of God. The city of God, not in a garden, but in a city. And so we see this progression happening all the way throughout the scripture. We see this progression of getting from this garden into this city. And something like that doesn't just happen. There's progress, there's change, there's culture, there's civilization that gets you to this point. And so how does that happen? It happens because Adam and Eve, they have to They have to work for it. They have to bring some proper management systems into place. And nobody told them how to do all of these things. They kind of had to just figure it out on their own. And how many of you have ever been in a job where you were just handed a set of things and told to figure it out on your own, right? I mean, that we've all been there. We've all been in a place where it was like, all right, here's the book. Just like go and figure it out, right? I mean, that's where they found themselves. And they had to figure these things out. No one ever told them, you know, you do rows of crops, you space out your seeds, all these types of things. And they never actually got this idea of what culture really needs. You see, God hasn't downloaded all of the knowledge into their brains. No, he's given them brains that function and grow and learn. But we need to figure out some of these systems ourselves by the way we communicate and pass along knowledge. You see, that's work. That is part of subduing and filling and creating. That all is work. And what is God up to today? You know, if you're a deist, I mean, you might think, what's God doing today? And you'll believe that once God finished creating the earth, he kind of just disconnected and got distant, right? No, I mean, not at all. Like, we believe that God is still at work in the world. It's still at work in the midst of our lives. And Jesus, he takes his cue from his Father in heaven. Look at what he says. It says this, my Father is always at his work to this very day. And I too am working. Like right now, he's working. He was working in that song we were singing. He was working in that conversation you had in the office, that conversation with your neighbor this week. God, Jesus is in the midst of every conversation you're in, every relationship you're in. He's working right now. And he created you and I to begin to value this work that he's doing. And so we have to build this rhythm back into the 167. We have to build this rhythm of working, getting to be like God when we work. Which brings me to the second one. When we work to serve others. We work to serve others. You see, at its base, if we get down to the core of what work really is, at its true core, I think work is really about serving other people. You know, a couple weeks back, we talked about play and rest, and which is, those are all incredibly important things. But when we look at work is really about serving other people. When we look at play, we're really serving ourselves. But when we work, we're serving somebody else. And this might feel a little bit difficult depending on where you work, whatever your work looks like, whether, you know, you're caring for an aging parent, or maybe you're folding the laundry at home, or maybe you're closing deals throughout the week on cold calls, like whatever you might find yourself, you might feel like this is a little bit difficult to figure out, how am I really serving? But let's put it like this. You know, if you're a trash man, I mean, this should be a little easy, right? You pick up trash at houses so that they don't stink, and that serves people, and you get money, but that ultimately it serves people. Or maybe you're a waitress or a barista, and what are you doing in there? You're giving up your time, you're giving refills, you're serving drinks, and maybe you're getting a paycheck, yeah, at the same time, but you're really serving other people while you work. And some occupations, they might be a little bit more difficult to figure out this serving angle. You know, maybe you find yourself in a cubicle. You're in the back, you're kind of crunching numbers, you're getting the quarter three, you know, quarterly numbers out, making sure it's accurate. You know, you might think like, I don't really see how I'm serving anybody when I'm doing that, Chris. But maybe you're serving that boss that you work for, that has people breathing down his neck, that feels so anxious and stressed out. You know, she just can't, she feels like she's at the end of the rope. You're serving her when you work hard, when you work well. Maybe you're serving the shareholders who put their own hard-earned money into that company. And these things, they need to be reported properly. I mean, you're serving them when you work hard, when you work well. Maybe you're a teacher. You know, if you're a teacher, you're serving that child. The mental processes of that child. You're growing, you're shaping the future for that child. You see, at its heart, work is really all about service. Jesus, he actually said this. He says, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And I think if we change these words up just a little bit, the intent would be still the exact same. Check this out. If we were to change it like this, like the Son of Man did not come to be worked for, but to work and to give his life, to give his life as a ransom for many. You see, this is what Jesus did. He worked. And you're like, Chris, I don't remember seeing Jesus work. I mean, he was spending time with people. He was teaching people. But, like, I don't really remember him, like, working. But maybe you've heard this before, that Jesus, he took up his father's business, that he was a builder, he was a carpenter. And maybe you don't really see Jesus getting a paycheck. But that's because really what you're reading is focusing on Jesus' life from about the age of 30 to 33. And in that time span, really, there's no record of Jesus getting a paycheck. There's no record of, you know, Jesus collecting that, putting it in his wallet, you know, buying things, any of that. But I'm pretty confident that up to that point in time, that he probably got a lot of paychecks. That Jesus was working all throughout. That he was a builder. He was a carpenter. He was working. He was getting paid. And while he was working, he was building things for other people. He was serving other people in the way that he was able to serve. Making a paycheck, that's awesome. But at its baseline, work is really about serving somebody else. And whether Jesus was getting a paycheck or whether he was not getting a paycheck, Jesus was still working. He was building things. He was doing things for other people. He was teaching other people. Jesus, he was no stranger to hard work. So what do we call our work? We call it our vocation, right? You know, if you look at your occupation, your job, it's your vocation. And what's cool about vocation, you know, you maybe not even realize it, but when you're saying that my vocation is a builder, or my vocation is an accountant, or my vocation is I'm a college professor or a salesperson, whatever you say your vocation is, you're actually tapping into the divine origin of what work really is. Check this out. This is the definition of vocation in the dictionary. Check this out. It's a divine call to God's service or to the Christian life, a function or a station of life to which one is called to by God. Is this Latin word, vocare, it means to call. It means to summon out. And we have to get to this place where we feel like our work, whether it's a job, whether it's, you know, folding laundry as a stay-at-home parent, whether it's taking care of an aging parent, whatever your work is, we have to get our hearts to the place of recognizing that it's not just a job. It's not just a paycheck. It's a calling. It's a calling to something more, something greater than just myself. You know, whether you're called or summoned to make cold calls because there's something that somebody needs to know on the other side. Or maybe you're a stay-at-home parent and you're folding laundry and you're doing the dishes, and that's back-breaking work, but you're called to it. You're summoned to it. You see, we have to get to the place where there's not this mystical fog that comes down and tells you this is exactly what you're going to be, and it's going to be incredible, and you're going to want to post about it on Instagram all the time because you have the best job in the world. No, we have to get to the place where we recognize that our work is so much more than just that. Our work is so much more than just a really cool job or this perfect job that you're proud to tell everybody about at your 10-year high school reunion. No. It's so much more because you're serving. You're serving somebody. And when you serve somebody, you become like God. There's this calling that I have. There's this beauty that comes out, this purity. And the reality is this, that this is not where we are as a culture. Would you agree with me? It's not where we are. And I don't care, like, where you find yourself on the spiritual spectrum, atheist, agnostic, believer, whatever you would call yourself, we should all be pretty united as people. That our culture is becoming less and less interested in God. And I think that it goes right in line with our attitude towards work, our decreasing desire to work. There's an organization called Gallup that does a poll every single year on employee engagement. Employee engagement basically just means when you go to work, do you do your job? Do you work hard? Do you care about what you're doing? Are you putting in the time, the energy, the effort? Are you actively engaged in the mission of the organization you're a part of? And what I found when I was looking at these statistics about employee engagement is that things were actually on the up and up. I mean, employee engagement numbers had gotten to their highest level in the history of the entire survey up until about March of 2020. They reached about 38% of employees that were actively engaged. You know, they've got this entire study that shows years and years and years, and these numbers had gotten all the way up to the highest number. And then something happened. Maybe you guys know what happened. COVID hit. And then they saw this significant drop in those engagement numbers at work. They found that at its height, that 38% of people were actively engaged in their mission, defined as, you know, you're showing up, you're doing what you're supposed to do, you're focusing on it, you're all in. But now that number is about 31% after COVID. And there might be something to do with these numbers a little bit beyond just what we're seeing right here. There's actually, you know, if we look at that clip from Michael Scott earlier, some of us probably felt that over the last year. You're just kind of going through the motions, getting to where you need to be, trying to just slug through the day. But actually, there's this thing that people have been calling the great resignation over the last several months. The great resignation. If you haven't heard about it, just Google it. I mean, the coronavirus pandemic, it offered a lot of people an opportunity to take stock of their life. To take stock of their work from home, their job in the office. And they recognized when their job was maybe either laid off or furloughed or sent home that honestly they weren't under this huge pressure to perform these essential functions that they never even really liked in the first place. And so whatever it was, whether they're laid off or furloughed or sent home, whatever it might be, they found themselves just kind of upended across the board, which allowed a lot of people to reevaluate what was most important, to reevaluate their work, their calling, their summons, this career that they found themselves in. And honestly, we've even seen that take place here on our staff. I mean, take our video and production coordinator, Drew, for example. Drew worked for years in the kind of technology industry, in the news organization industry, and he had been telling me this, actually, we've even talked about this for a couple of years at this point, that he felt like there was more, that God wanted more from him, that there was something that he could do that was more towards his calling, that was outside of where he just worked. And he made the jump. And he works here now. He's sitting in the back right now. I mean, Drew made the jump because he felt like there was more to life than just this work that he didn't feel called to. And it's what people are calling the great resignation. I mean, we're seeing it over and over and over. So there are way more layers to these numbers, but the keys here are still the same. That when you look at these numbers, that it's nearly 50% of people that are not actively engaged in their job. That nearly 50% are, you know, they're showing up, they're surfing the web, they're on social media, you know, they're buying stuff on Amazon, they're getting their stuff done, but they're kind of checked out most of the time. You know, I'll come in a little early tomorrow so I can go home, you know, whenever I want the next day. Like, you're just kind of going through the motions. And then you look at these numbers, you think, okay, well, where does that leave the rest of it? Well, the rest, this 12%, are actively disengaged, meaning they're intentionally subverting the culture. They're subverting their boss. They're subverting the environment. They're intentionally talking trash about the place. I mean, these are the people that are checked out completely and willing to go as far as they can to tell people why it's the worst place in the world. And here's what's disturbing to me about these numbers. You see, after COVID, that 38% dropped to about 31%. And what's disturbing about these numbers is that's now about 69% of people who are disengaged or actively disengaged. That they're just not tapping into their God-ordained, their God-designed thing for them to do. And this is reflective of the waning work ethic that we see in our culture, this lack of connection with God. It's a sign that we've lost our connection. We've lost our connection with God on this. And honestly, around Crosspoint, we've seen it too. I mean, our overall numbers of volunteers have dropped substantially. And listen, we get it. Like, your family's rhythms over the last 18 months are different. Your schedules are different. Rhythms have changed. Your weekly connections and interactions have kind of gone out the window, and you've created new ones. But when you do that, when you pull out and pull away from those things, this divine connection that you had, this purpose that you feel, it's no longer there. And again, we get it. I mean, things look completely different than they did all the way back in 2019. I mean, all the ways you used to maybe be able to serve or be a part of the mission here at Crosspoint might not be happening right now. Maybe you loved working at the coffee bar during the middle of the week, or maybe you loved being back in the kids' environments on a Sunday at 10:30 in the morning. I mean, wherever you might have found yourself, maybe it's just not there right now. But even in the midst of it, there's so many ways to get connected and engaged in the mission of this place, and really the divine connection that comes when we serve, when we tap into God in the way that we work. And the last thing that we're going to talk about here is this third one, that when we work to produce. Adam and Eve, they were put in the garden to produce a culture, to build up a kingdom. And Jesus, he was put on the earth to produce a righteous life so that salvation could be produced for people like you and like me. And there's nothing wrong with production. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting things done, with checking things off the list. You see, anything that you want to do, that you want to work towards, usually is going to require a lot of hard work. It's going to require production. Maybe you want to make more money, right? Well, what do? You do more work. And then you have more money. Or maybe you want to have a better relationship with your spouse or with your parents. Well, it requires work. Maybe you find yourself and you just think, Chris, I wish I had a better prayer life. Well, it doesn't just happen. I mean, it requires work. You might think, I hear people say this a lot. Well, Chris, I'm an introvert. Like, I don't want to pray out loud in front of people, and listen, I get it. Like, I'm still one of the younger kids on the cul-de-sac that I grew up on. A lot of these families still live there. But when I show up at the family Christmas, and there's 30 some odd people there, they're like, hey, Chris, you want to pray, right? You're the pastor now. And it's like, listen, it doesn't just come naturally. It requires work. It's not like extroverts are like, oh yeah, I'd love to pray in front of a bunch of people. Let's do it, right? I mean, anything that's of value, it requires some work. Last verse for us today. This is Colossians 3. Check this out. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward, that you are serving the Lord Christ. Whatever you do, whether it's serving somewhere unpaid, whether it's fixing a joint on a plumbing line, or whether you're teaching a child and molding a young mind, whether it's managing somebody or putting that torque wrench on a lug nut, because when we work, we're tapping into the divine. Work heartily unto the Lord. Maybe you're managing somebody and you recognize, man, I'm going to have to let this person go. We'll work heartily unto the Lord by giving them the real, honest truth in loving ways, and doing so in a way that's going to protect everyone else who's still working there, because that person, they may hurt someone with their words, with their actions, and do it working heartily unto the Lord. Maybe you're a teacher. Maybe you're a teacher and you're starting to put some lesson plans together for the next year. Well, don't just go into autopilot. I know, I get it, it's a lot easier to do that, but recognize that all of your best, bring your best, your creative energies, your best minds to make that lesson work. Why? Because you're working heartily unto the Lord. Because you're trying to produce people that honestly wouldn't be produced without you. And in the process, you'll be serving, and you'll find out that honestly you're a lot more like God than maybe you ever anticipated. So we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to have you stand here in just a second. We're going to run through a couple of next steps. So let's stand. I've got a couple of next steps that if you begin to put these in, if you begin to implement them right now, that God can begin to change what this work looks like, whatever your work might be. So first one is this. Maybe you do a job inventory. Maybe you look at all the jobs you've had over your life and you see the ways that God has changed you, shaped you, molded your character, expanded your horizons, and the ways that he's made you the person that you are today. So maybe create a job inventory. Second one is this. I don't know about you, but the last year's been a little weird, hasn't it? I mean, I'm an extrovert. I love hanging out with Brad every day and Mark every day, the guys in the back. Like, I love that. But I work from home every day. And when you're at home, man, it's easy to just kind of kick back, right? I mean, over the last 18 months, you've probably done that. Well, listen. It's time to decide to get after it again, to get up, to get moving, and to get after it. So maybe that's your next step this week. Decide to get after it. And the last one is this, to volunteer. Jump in, serve somebody, whether it's here, whether it's outside this place, Gleaners, Wheelers, Cafe, whatever it might be. Get out, start serving, volunteer, jump in. The world needs the skill set that you have. So volunteer, jump in, serve a team. All right, Brad and the band, they got one more song. We're going to sing this together. We'll get out of here. Let's do this.